Deuteronomy 31.
Levites.
I want to read some stuff just as the introductory stuff. Moses is now dead. Or he's about to be. That's not true. Moses is about to be dead. So he's when the word Moses, remember last time we talked about the Mount of Transfiguration in which Christ in Matthew 17 and Mark 9, Christ ascended the Mount of Transfiguration and time and space lost its hold on him and he was in this mystery place. And he was talking to Moses and Elijah, and they spake of his death. That's all he talked about. Well, Moses, every time you see the word Moses after Moses' stuff, you always know that Moses, when the Jews talked about the word, used the word Moses, they're talking about the law. The word Moses means water or water bearer. And we'll see as an integral part of the Feast of Tabernacles, it's the pouring out of the water. But for the sake of your understanding, when you search the scriptures, every time you see the word Moses, you know, it's like Jesus said, had they understood Moses, they would have known me. Had they paid attention to Moses, they'd have loved me. Well, he's not talking about Moses, you know. He's talking about that which personified or embodied Moses, namely the receiving of the law. Okay, verse 31, chapter 1. And what I'm going to talk to you about here, all this took place on the Feast of Tabernacles, Deuteronomy 31. And Moses went and spake these words unto all of Israel, and he said unto them, I am 120 years old this day, and I'm tired. No. I can no more go out and come in. Also the Lord has said unto me, thou shalt not go over this Jordan. Now you can see that in a lot of ways. Moses couldn't enter the promise because the law can't enter the promise. Moses couldn't enter the promise even though he was the most prominent of all of the people second to Christ himself, because he struck the rock twice. And we've talked about that. He crucified Christ twice. He's 120 years old. There's a whole other thing that we'll get into about each of the days. Each of the years of Moses constituted one person that constituted a community. 120 had to be the number that constituted a new community in Israel. And he said unto them, chapter 3, the Lord thy God, he will go over before thee, and he will destroy those nations from before thee, and thou shalt possess them. And Joshua, he shall go over before thee, as the Lord has said. Now the word Joshua, you might as well, wherever it says Joshua in the Old Testament, it's Jesus. It's Yeshua. And so the law dies and Christ is born. Now, that isn't history. On the Feast of Tabernacles, your law, no matter how imperfectly you're seeing your law, will be destroyed as we throw those paradise apples at the base of the altar. That's the destruction. When the law dies, the tree of life, or Christ himself, is resurrected. They cannot coexist. You can't have the law and the resurrection. It's like you cannot mix oil and water. You cannot mix the resurrection and Jesus. It's impossible. That's why we must die daily so that we experience his resurrection daily. That's why if you're preaching or talking to someone, you'll find this strange, wild thing takes place, that every word that comes out of your own mouth kills you. If it doesn't, it's not preaching. The law has to die so that the resurrection is manifested. Now, if the law dies and there's no resurrection, the only reason it doesn't, the only reason there's no resurrection is that it was you then utilized the lack of law. In other words, it didn't totally die. You just manipulated it. Now, you may not understand all of thou shalt, and all of John Rutledge told us the story today, but today is the feast of Yom Kippur. And so there they had some guy that's teaching about Yom Kippur in their little devotional they have on Wednesdays. And he said, well, you can't do the 613 laws of Moses, but you have to do the Ten Commandments. Well, that's not what he said. He said, if you try to keep all the law, and if you keep the law and you offend in one point, you're guilty of it all. You have to keep it all. That's why it's either all law and no grace, or no grace and all law. They cannot coexist. And the sooner you get that in your head, in your daily activities, the more you'll see. And what is the law with regard to you? Tell me, you each of you have an idea of what your life should be like tomorrow. That's the law. That has to die. How has it died? How has it come to nothing? Perception of vanity. Now, this will cut across and destroy every single element of you until you finally come, and then you find when you don't have to worry about tomorrow. You know, a year ago, Rick couldn't get a job. Huh? I mean, he couldn't get a job. Nobody returned his calls, nothing. I mean, that's... But now, there's all kinds of stuff just flowing in. He doesn't even know where it comes from. You know, because there was something that took place in him in which he was able to be at rest in the midst of this angst. You know, that's no accident that Rick, you know, it wasn't an accident that I asked Levi to live with Rick and Rex. Rex is still going through it because he's still, I gotta do this. Well, the moment he says, I don't have to do it anymore, I'm gonna be at rest, then the resurrection takes place. And the same has to be seen in whatever area of life you're in. You understand? What? We're not going to get very far here. In verse 4, then the Lord shall do unto them as he did to Sihon and to Og, kings of the Amorites, and unto the land of them whom he destroyed. And the Lord shall give them up before your face, that you may do unto them according unto all the commandments which I have commanded you. Be strong and of good courage, fear not, nor be afraid of them. For the Lord thy God, he it is that doth go with thee. He will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. That's why all of the scriptures that are connected with the New Testament have as their basis, if you have eyes to see, that he will perform that which he's appointed you to do. Now, if you've got it in your mind, you've got to do it, then he's not going to perform it. You understand? He's not going to fight your efforts. And Moses called unto Joshua and said unto him in the sight of all of Israel, Be strong and of good courage, for thou must go with this people unto the land which the Lord hath sworn unto their fathers to give them, and thou shalt cause them to inherit it. And the Lord, he it is that doth go before thee. He will be with thee. He will not fail thee, neither forsake thee. Fear not, neither be dismayed. And Moses wrote this law and delivered it unto the priests and the sons of Levi, which bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord, and unto all the elders of Israel. Now, we've got the Torah now, the law, written. Moses has written it down. You got it? And it's in the sight of the people. And Moses commanded them, saying, At the end of every 7 years, in the solemnity of the year of release, in the feast of tabernacles, when all Israel is come to appear before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose, thou shalt read this law before all Israel in their hearing. Now, you understand what he just said? This is dumb. They're going to take this thing that the modern church calls scripture and that they worship, and they're saying, you're going to look at it once every 7 years. Do you understand?
They're going to take Torah and read it once every 7 years.
That's what he just got through saying.
Oh.
You understand? Once every 7 years at the Feast of Tabernacles.
In the year of release.
In the year of release. Now, thou shalt read this law before all Israel in their hearing. At that time you gather the people together, men and women and children, and thy stranger that is within thy gates, that they may hear and that they may learn and fear the Lord your God and observe to do all the words of this law. And that their children which have not known anything, now we got a bunch of those, may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live in the land whither you go over Jordan to possess it. And the Lord said unto Moses, behold, thy days approach that thou must die. Now I want you to begin to feel the excitement as the Day of Tabernacles approaches, because that day the law must die. Not that it becomes fruitless, but it becomes fulfilled. And you are free to be you. That's the meaning of the Feast of Tabernacles. Let me read it to you again. Now, again, it's not, when it talks about, when the scriptures use the word law, it doesn't just mean these 613 things. It means the way a thing works. And it doesn't matter whether you think it the way, I mean, it's whatever way you think it works. And eventually, it means even all of the laws of nature. Jesus Christ overcame every single law of nature as you read those scriptures. He overcame every single law of science. That's part of the reason he did the miracles he did, so that even today we can see that there was no scientific law that he didn't fulfill. There was no part of the what you think things should be tomorrow that he didn't fulfill. Get ready. Your law must die on the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, where'd you get your law? There's only one place you got your law, from your fathers. Your fathers didn't inherit the promise. Why in the hell are you paying any attention to them? Your fathers, if they're not dead, they're on their way to death. Harry had the terrible, terrible task of watching his father waste away to nothing before his eyes and die. Well, all of your fathers, if they're not dead yet, they are very close to it. The only place you got your law is from your father. That's why it says, call no man on earth father. The law must die so that you are freed from the constraints of the law in terms of your definition of how the thing should work. If you have an a priori definition of way things should work, then you can never, ever, ever know freedom. You are locked into the limits of your perception of the law, which is wrong. The law must die. Moses must die.
How do you get to that point? I mean, is there any certain time? Because I'm having a real problem with that. I want to be at that point, but it's like, I can't get there.
You can't get there from here. Well, look at Pete. Pete has been here in this group for 14 years. He's just now starting to see it, the freedom of it. Now, God has given each one of us the grace to accomplish that. And it doesn't matter. You're made the way you're supposed to be made. My instinct, God, like, it's the grace, you know, you all heard me say this before, but let me remind you. There are three graces that are given to all of mankind to see God, and they're typified in the scriptures. The grace of Abraham, the grace of Isaac, and the grace of Jacob. That phrase is used 165 times, that you must have the faith of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's said for a reason. The faith of Abraham is the long, slow, I don't want to do this anymore. If you read Abraham, you'll find out he did nothing but mess up, and yet he was called a friend of God. He sold his wife. I mean, he did everything. There's nothing he didn't do wrong. That's it.
Want to meet my sister?
But finally, at the end, he saw the promise. Just forget it. It's all right.
All right. Yes. Good.
So that's all of us have all three of these graces resident, but in each one of them is dominant. Grace of Abraham says, all you're doing is running around doing stuff, and he says, I don't want to do that anymore. So then you go to something else, and I don't want to do that anymore. And then you go to something else, I don't want to do that anymore. The second grace is the grace of Jacob, and that's the grace of the fight, the struggle. You have to have the clarity. You wrestle with the angel until your leg is broken. That's the grace of Jacob. And that's also, it's not just one fight, it's constant wrestling. You're always struggling. And the other is the grace of Isaac. And that's instant revelation. Everybody thinks they want the grace of Isaac. Instant revelation. But consider Isaac for a moment. Isaac was bound to the altar with a knife at his throat, with every certainty that his throat would be cut and he would be the burnt offering.
How old was he when he said?
30.
30. Oh, God.
That's how you get, that's the grace of Isaac. Now, all of you have all three of those in you. For some of you, one's more dominant than the other. And that's simple faith. That's how you get there. You live. You be honest. Okay? This gets better. Verse 14, and the Lord said unto Moses, behold, thy days approach that thou must die. And that's being said to you tonight. There, from our standpoint, this happened in the Feast of Tabernacles. Our celebration of the Feast of Tabernacles begins on the evening of October 7th. You must die on October 7th. Call Joshua. Sir, I would see Jesus. Call Jesus. He's the only thing that can take place. Not to save you in the stupid religious word. You know, put the name of your idols on. I mean, it's so that he now is your life. Call unto Joshua. You better start calling tonight, in case he's busy. What? Yeah. No, he didn't have an answering machine. You got to call, you got to face-to-face stuff. And the Lord said unto Moses, I said that.
We're calling Joshua.
I said that.
Call Joshua and present yourself in the tabernacle of the congregation, that I may give him charge. And Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves in the tabernacle of the congregation. And the Lord appeared in the tabernacle in a pillar of a cloud. And the pillar of the cloud stood over the door of the tabernacle. And the Lord said unto Moses, Behold, thou shalt sleep with thy fathers. Now, die. And this people will rise up and go a-whoring after the gods of the strangers of the land, whither they go to be among them, and will forsake me and break my covenant which I've made with them. This is God talking. Then my anger shall be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them, and I will hide my face from them. Sound familiar? This is after Joshua has already appeared. And they shall be devoured, and many evils and troubles shall befall them, so that they will say in that day, Are not these evils come upon us because our God is not among us? You're supposed to be tested to the point where you no longer believe that God exists. I cannot tell you how much God hates blind faith. I mean, he really hates it. He just, all his stuff he learned. Fortunately, I didn't grow up in a church, but my God, the stuff I hear. And what you all know, I told you before, my only experience was a church ended when I was six. And I went to a Lutheran catechism school. And the priest came and talked to my mother and father and said that they didn't want me there anymore because I was an evil seed. Because I was an evil kid because I asked questions they couldn't answer. Well, that's what all religion does to you. They place this garbage on you that says, well, you're not to know that, my son. That's bullshit. There is nothing that you are not to know. You are to understand all things. All right. And I will surely hide my face in that day for all the evils which they have brought in that they are turned unto other gods. Now that all this is a history of you. You've always been, there's never been a moment when it wasn't Christ in you, when you weren't his people, when Joshua wasn't present. But every one of you have gone and changed and chased after all the other gods. And you're convinced, I know most of you well enough to know that there's been 100 times you've been convinced that God didn't exist. There's no God. Just in the time that I've known you. 1,000 maybe. Oh, poor me, God doesn't exist. Now therefore, write ye this song for you, and teach it to the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths, that this song may be a witness for me against the children of Israel.
What song is that?
Well, you're going to see it in a minute. It's called the Song of Moses.
Oh, okay.
What? We may not get to it tonight.
Oh, but it's in here.
It's Deuteronomy 38.
Okay.
You want to look it up real quick?
Can I?
Sure.
We're reading ahead.
Deuteronomy 38.
He's right here. Okay. Oh, it's not there. Oh, what he's looking at. Oh, man. Ooh.
You're taking.
Okay. We'll let that one slide by, Ollie.
Now therefore write ye this song for you, and teach it to the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths, that the song may be a witness for me against the children of Israel. For when I shall have brought them into the land which I swear unto their fathers, that floweth with milk and honey, and they shall have eaten and filled themselves and waxen fat, then they will turn unto other gods and serve them and provoke me and break my covenant. That's what happened in every generation. Every generation happened. That's why this process has to be repeated every generation. Because you wax fat. Get fat wax. And it shall come to pass, when many evils and troubles are befallen them, that this song shall testify against them as a witness. For it shall not be forgotten out of the mouths of their seed. For I know their imagination. I know your little plans. Ha! I'm going to take control of my life. I'm going to get it right this time. I can do it this time. Well, you think I'm just talking to you?
No, I just look up and he's got me.
Oh, I see.
He's talking to me
today.
He wasn't
going to
I know their imagination, the inner thoughts of their hearts. Got their plans down. Why does he have them down? Because he put them there to test you. That's why John the Baptist said, the only thing you can do in communication is to bring forth fruit necessary for repentance. The only thing that a preacher can do is show you the stupidity of your plans. The only thing a body can do is to have enough people who have experienced enough things so that you can see that what you don't have to go through with some, you know, because he did it. You know, some of you want to be in media, be a star. Well, look at Rick.
We ended the show today with me in a bunny outfit.
Were you in a bunny outfit?
Yeah, just a hat and a tail.
Nothing
like
else?
A bunny outfit?
Yeah, but I'm a 32-year-old man going like that into the sunset.
But I'm just
a pretty picture.
And of course you can take Rex.
Oh, you can.
Rex is
many have.
Rex.
They say, you want to be a golf pro? Look at Rex.
Yeah. No. Rex. The greatest line I've ever heard out of the mouth of Rex. He's had a lot of jobs in radio and television, been reasonably successful and good, very successful sometimes. But once he was offered a job on a radio station, and it was a pretty good radio station, and they said, well, what's the frequency? And they said, 106.2. Can't take the job. I've already worked that frequency.
He's worked them all. Up and down the dial.
Mr. Golden Throat himself. All right. But you understand that? You gotta look at this weird gathering of people. And the experiences we've had are always for somebody else. I mean, that's the mystery. In a body, if you're concerned with yourself, it's called cancer. And that's why cancer will never be cured, because it's the spiritual type of what's going on in the church. All a cancer cell is it a cell that instead of its giving to its nearest, it's taking. And there's as many different kinds of cancers as there are different kinds of cells. Therefore, it will never be a cure for cancer. Okay, verse 21. For it shall not be forgotten out of the mouths of their seed, for I know their imagination, which they go about even now, before I brought them into the land which I swear. Moses therefore wrote this song the same day and taught it to the children of Israel. And he gave Joshua the son of Nun a charge and said, be strong and of good courage, for thou shalt bring the children of Israel into the land which I swear unto them, and I will be with thee.
Where's the song?
It's chapter 32.
Oh.
But anyway, that's all of that is being said. Listen carefully now. All of that is being said in the Feast of Tabernacles. Moses must die. And now watch what happens. And it came to pass, when Moses had made an end of writing the words of this law in a book until they were finished, that Moses commanded the Levites, which bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord, saying, Now take this book of the law and put it in the side of the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God, that it may be there for a witness against thee. Now, stop there a minute. Go to, keep your finger there. Go to Hebrews 8. But now hath he obtained a more excellent ministry, by how much also he is the mediator of a better covenant, which was established upon better promises. For if that first had been faultless, then should no place have been sought for the second. For finding fault with them, he saith, Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, when I will make a new covenant. Now, again, you got to hear this. He's not saying new in time. He's saying it's not. It's not new. That's not a word there. I mean, it's new in. What's the word I'm trying to think of? God has only made one covenant. The old covenant, the law, all of the writings and the prophets were a picture of that covenant. And if you're an architect or if you're a builder, those were all of the model, the architect's model of the building. And so when the building comes, that the picture or the schematic diagram is revealed, then it's not, you don't call it a new covenant, you call it the fulfillment of the covenant. So that's one of the things that people in the church have gotten so confused about, because they call it old and new in time. And they're not subject to the old anymore because the new has come. That's not what it means. It means that all, if your house is in trouble, and with the electricity, you have to get the wiring diagram out to find out what's the wrong. I mean, that's what's... You understand me?
Yeah.
All right. For if the first covenant had been faultless, then should no place have been sought for the second. For finding fault with them, he saith. Now, even the people of Israel, after the flesh, were only a schematic drawing, a model of the building. All right. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, because they continued not in my covenant, and I regarded them not, saith the Lord. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my law into their mind and write them in their hearts. You understand? They're placing the law in the side of the ark. You are the ark in this typology. And write them in their hearts, and I will be to them a God, and they shall to be to me a people. And they shall not teach every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord. For all shall know me from the least to the greatest. Now that's the situation that we're in today and have been for 2,000 years. Because the law was known, all know him, all have seen his presence. On the day of Pentecost, the seed of Christ has been placed in all flesh. You understand? The feast of Pentecost celebrated the placing of the seed. The Feast of Tabernacles celebrates what has already been accomplished so that you know in your mind what has been accomplished in your heart. Therefore, you are then transfigured by the renewing of your mind. Your mind knows what's already been done. That's all that your life is about. All right.
This thing, these words where it says, I will be to them a God and they will be to me a people. Is that another way of saying, I will be to them and they will be to me?
That's right. Well, it's even, yeah. I will be merciful to their unrighteousness, and their sins and their iniquities will remember no more. In that he saith the new, he hath made the first old. Now that which decayeth and waxeth old is ready to vanish away. It has. As the architect modeled, as they built a building downtown, they had a little model of it, they showed investors. Well, when they have the big building, they don't need a little model anymore. Somebody might keep it around as a relic, but that's what we're about. Now, you got to begin to see. As long as you think this stuff about law is only what's written in this stale old book, then the best you can ever do is be religious. But if you begin to perceive that what this is talking about is not only this law, which is spiritual, but it's also your perception of the way things should be. That's what died. The Feast of Tabernacles is a celebration of it. Now, the Feast of Tabernacles is the celebration of liberty in its purest form. The Feast of Passover was the hope of liberty. Who else do you know that would be stupid enough to tell 50 people your only job is to do what you feel like doing? That's pretty wild when you stop and think about it. Go back to Deuteronomy. No, that's not.
Will you get ready to sing the song?
Yes, yeah, get the song and then quit.
No, I want you to. You guys can figure out how to sing that song.
Okay.
Now let me try to review some things with you that also happened on the Feast of Tabernacles. In Exodus, while they were still in Egypt, you remember God placed a cloud between Pharaoh's armies and Israel. So it confused Pharaoh's armies. Remember when we studied that? Why did we ever study that? That cloud that he placed between Pharaoh's armies is always there. From Pharaoh's standpoint, when Pharaoh looks at the cloud, he sees nothing but blackness. When Egypt, when the world, when all your little plans and ambitions and dreams sees that cloud, they will see nothing but blackness. On the other side of the cloud, when Israel looks at that cloud, they see nothing but brightness. So the cloud, that cloud came down as the guidance instrument of Israel on the Feast of Tabernacles. And from that moment forward, that cloud has never ceased to be manifested. Now, you remember I told you that when we studied high place activities, that your high place activities were great and fine and wonderful and you could get by with them and it didn't matter. Until, because all the prophets did. Until the temple, the one place, was dedicated. Well, on the Feast of Tabernacles was the dedication of Solomon's temple in 1 Kings chapter 8. Now, I want you all to read it sometime in the next, before we meet again. 1 Kings chapter 8 is a description of the glory of God filling your temple at the moment you present yourself to Him without condition. It has to be seen. You are the temple of God. It's at the Feast of Tabernacles that the temple of God is dedicated and the Shekinah glory fills the temple. You understand me? That is the penultimate phenomena that occurs on the Feast of Tabernacles, is that the temple of God is dedicated. Now it's 1 Kings chapter 8. And I want you to please, please read it. Well, there's a lot of other things that happened in this study, but I think I'm putting everybody to sleep, so.
I think it's ringing in my head as the words, my perception of what things should be.
What?
His perception of the way things should be is his law.
That's what has to, that's the law that has to die.
Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to wake up tomorrow and be, you know, a robot that has no perception of what things should be. It means that you no longer give it any breath. You see through it. I want you to try to get us, the reason God set up these feasts, and they said in the scripture they're supposed to be celebrated as long as time exists, is so that it brings clarity at moments in time to you. You got to see that if you want to take it this way, that everything that happened in the scriptures, everything that all the rest of the people that you know about in this group, all of us have concentrated our energies so that you could see. I mean, don't say that we could see. You got to personalize it, because the law has to die in you, not in, I mean, you understand me? You have to begin to see that your ideas and perceptions about the way things should be have not ever once brought you happiness, have not ever once brought you a sense of fulfillment. They're ghosts. They're gods that have had lorded over you. Now they can all die. Because of this simple thing, you've got to have either all grace or no grace. You can't say, well, I'll follow God, but. You're not going to be put in any situation that you're not designed to be put into. If you're a Ferrari, you're not going to be out there, you know, pulling trucks out of the mud. And of course, if you're a tractor, you're not going to be in the Grand Prix. But whatever it is that you are, be what you are, without apology. That's the real meaning of the Feast of Tabernacles. It's a celebration of the spirit of liberty, the true meaning of liberty and all its manifestations. Well, I don't know what I want to do. It doesn't matter. He does. Amen?
Amen.
October 7th is, we're going to bust balls. I mean, pomegranates.
Pomegranate fountain. Rick, we're going to bust some fruit out to ranch, so I just might want to come along.
Anybody have anything else? You okay now?
Yeah, fine.
Take it, big guy.